And yes, why not? Why not, in fact, hit the record on the video as well? All right, there we go. It's been a year. It's been years, no Doom. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I got to start again here. Welcome. Sorry, I forgot to hit the record. It's the 14th of May, 2025. And we are doing our thing tonight, philosophy. And, you know, I've been following politics so much lately. You know, like an alcoholic who just watches videos of a distillery, an ex-alcoholic who just watches videos of a distillery. I've been sneaking in and watching a little politics lately. I have a few thoughts, but I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know if y'all are interested in politics anymore or if it is just a let bygones be bygones kind of thing. I just don't know. I just don't know. So you can let me know. Doom, aren't we there already? Or at least those in power would have us believe. No, Doom is nice because Doom is nice for me because I already know the weapons. You know, when if I look at a new game, it's like, oh, complicated and weapons and so on. Like sometimes when I am, I play Defense Zone 3 every now and then, it's a tablet game. When I'm on a, doing something really boring, like cardio, because I already know the weapons. But if it's like, oh, there's a new tower defense game, and it's like, oh no, I have to try and figure out the weaponry. And it's not that it's too complicated, it just takes too long. You know, mortality, I'll be 59 this year. Mortality is looming. It's in the rear view. You know, death is catching up, baby. And you can see the end of the movie. You can see the end of the movie. You know, you ever watch these movies where it's like, oh, this is the final scene. Like you get the feeling. No, I'm not the final scene. I've still got hopefully 20 years to go, but I can feel it. I can feel it. Well, if you have politics, you know what? I'll dip in. What the hell? What the hell? I'll dip in. You can tell me what your questions are with regards to politics. To politics. There's quite a lot that's going on. It's quite a lot going on. Oh, freedomain.com/donate. Oh, yes. Let's do a little business. Fit a cent style. Do a little business. freedomain.com/donate, or you can donate right here on the app. And remember, if you subscribe, you get all kinds of tasty goodies, really great tasty goodies. I'd like to thank Academic Agent on X, who wrote, Stefan Molyneux's only crime was being early. And Zato Nietzsche said, he's going to come back like Gandalf the White any day now. Stefan, the universally preferable. And there was a picture of Gandalf the White with my face on it, which gave me a chuckle. It gave me quite a chuckle. And I appreciate that. It's nice. Nice to see that the knowledge of the Molyneux has not completely left the mind of men. Has not completely left the mind and soul of men. Canada and Australia just had elections. Why do the population both swing hard left? Well, I don't know about Australia, but I can tell you that in Canada, it's the boomers, right? The boomers have a lock on leftism. The boomers are the reason why the liberals got into power. If you look at the young and the middle-aged, it is significantly conservative. And so the boomers are keeping the left in power. Well, in America, it's two groups. It's the boomers, and also it is young to middle-aged, unmarried, and particularly middle-aged, unmarried women. Which is why the left is continually sowing division between men and women, right? It's continually making women paranoid of men, you know, sleeping with the enemy. Men are going to turn on you, and they're going to dump you, and if you have their babies, they're going to abandon you, and they're going to leave you with nothing. And so this continual hyper-paranoid ooga-booga feminism is designed to have women steer clear of men. And then women, so a woman's, this is just my theory, right? A woman's neurological system is calmed by male assertiveness, right? And when women don't have men, they stay in a state of two things. They stay in a state of anxiety, and they stay in a state of pathological altruism. The pathological altruism is supposed to be for your children, but it then spreads, as I've talked about in my novels, to other areas of life. And the generalized anxiety means that women feel nervous, particularly as they age and they're single. They feel nervous and anxious, and they then turn to the government to calm their nervousness and their anxiety, which is why they want guaranteed, made-up cubicle jobs, and they want old age pensions, and they want free healthcare, and just they're worried, right? They're concerned. So unfortunately, when you sow bitterness between the sexes, the reward you reap, which is considerable, is massive amounts of political power. So women who are single don't like the free market. And women who are married like the free market. Women who are single want bigger government because it gives them the same sense of security that a man would give them. And women who are married want smaller government because a larger government interferes with their husband's, usually their husband's income, right? And therefore the reason. So a woman who's single wants bigger government because it gives her more resources. A woman who's married wants smaller government because it gives her family, through her husband in general, more resources. So that's the sad thing. And this is why, in particular for white women, it's this constant propaganda of white man bad, right? There's white man bad, stay away from white men and blah, 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 right? And that way they will generally stay single, stay paranoid, stay jumpy. And into the arms of the government they go, to the expense of everybody else. Yes, yes, yes. All right. Yes, refugees. Yeah, the South African refugees. I mean, that's real mask off, right? Episcopalian church no longer working the government to resettle refugees. That's totally mask off. And of course, you know, Lauren Southern back in the day and myself back in the day, we were talking about this kind of stuff in South Africa. And it is really mask off in that way, right? I mean, to not see it now, you'd have to be poking your eyeballs out with the blue octopus tentacles. For men, if you smile at the wrong woman, she'll have you up on charges. Oh, come on, man. That's bullshit. You can smile at a woman. You're not, I mean, you can smile at a woman. I smile at women. I smile at men. I'm a pretty friendly and positive fellow. And if you smile at the wrong woman, she'll have you up on charges. I don't see how that is possible. And maybe I've missed a whole bunch of things. Maybe there. But please don't spread absolute falsehoods like this. Please be fucking responsible about the things you put out into the world. A woman, if you smile at a woman, she cannot have you up on charges. I don't know what that means. So for men, if you smile at the wrong woman, she'll have you up on charges. Or if you marry, she'll cheat and take you for half. Oh, that's the propaganda. My apologies. My apologies. premature elaboration. I jumped the gun. Baumega, I'm very sorry. Sorry. I thought that this is what you were saying. But for men, this is the propaganda, right? Thank you. I appreciate that correction. I apologize for my harsh tone, and you're totally in the right. I jumped the gun. Sorry about that. It says, for men, so this is the propaganda. For men, if you smile at the wrong woman, she'll have you up on charges, or if you marry, she'll cheat and take half your money, and lifelong child support for the rest of your life about covers it. Yeah, that is the propaganda. And, you know, it's tough. I don't know if you do, guys, hit me with a why. If you do, hit me with a why. I don't. But do you do online dating? Do you do digital dating? Not for most teenage boys, digital dating is just masturbation. But for you, do you do digital are dating. See, digits. Phalanges. yes, I watched Bones once or twice. Now, is this true? This is true. I was watching a guy give a speech about digital dating, and he was saying it takes 500 swipes to get even a coffee date. It takes 500 swipes for a man even to get a coffee date. And half of those coffee dates will ghost or flake and not, or not show up, and you just won't have the coffee, right? This is what he was saying. True or not, I don't know. This is what the guy was saying. It seems to be about right. So if it takes 500 swipes to get a potential coffee date, and one out of the two of those is going to ghost or flake, then it takes a thousand swipes to get one coffee date. That's wild. That's wild. I'm completely mad. So, I mean, how does that feel as a man? How does that feel? And this is why I don't understand why people, again, I mean, why you all don't talk to people in person. You can't be batting less than that. You can't be batting worse than that. I mean, talking to a woman in person, you're not going to talk to 1,000 women before you get a coffee. So, I mean, that always was my approach in general. So this is going back real deep into the vaults of time, but I think I was on a message board. It was not really a dating app, but it was a message board. And I was always sort of reminded there used to be these chat lines, you know, 1-900, chat to women kind of thing. And I remember The Simpsons parodying it. I think it was with Apu. Are there any women here? It was all just dudes talking to each other. Oh, my gosh. So, I remember being on a chat board, kind of just when I was single, that was kind of designed for dating. And I remember chatting with a couple of women, and, you know, I have a fair amount of typey riz, and this is long before you. I think there were pictures. Yeah, I think there were pictures. You know what? I might actually still have the picture. I might actually still have the picture that I used on my dating app. Oh my gosh, I was just thinking about this. I think I might. I'm still waiting for foundational aging to kick in. You know, I mean, it's going to happen, right? And every now and then, like if I see a picture of myself in full sunlight, I'm like, oh, Mount Rushmore, what have the years wrought upon you? Okay, Windows, do you feel like giving me any previews, or is that just a bridge too far? No, just useless pictures. Yeah, I had a photographer who took pictures of me sort of way back in the day because I just needed a bunch of thumbnails and stuff. That's me shaking my fist at the European Union. Nice. I was like, I'm in Brazil. I gave a speech where I called that political corruption and hypocrisy to a large audience full of politicians. My sense of survival instinct has not always been the super highest in the known universe, but I think I have used it to fairly good effect as a whole. You've aged incredibly well. You know, not bad, right? I mean, that picture was almost 30 years ago, and not too bad. I mean, I will credit my wife to some of this. She taught me about face creams and all of that, which is, you know, nice. And helpful, so I sort of try to recommend that. Thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate that. He said, I just got a solid job offer from a good company with a small pay bump. Thanks for the shows and advice about how to assess career roles and companies. You are very welcome. I'm very glad to have helped that. Faith Goldie, what happened to her? She kind of despawned from the universe, like I'm one to say. Like I'm one, oh, whatever happened to that person who seemed to have vanished from public view? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Unstinkable. Unstinkable. Oh my gosh. Here's an old picture. Oh, that's interesting. So this is the picture that I got taken from. Yeah. So this is a picture I got taken for the cover of my novel Revolutions when it first got published. Let's see here. This is before I met my wife, my gosh. And you should get the novel Revolutions. You can get it at freedomainnfts.com. This was the author cover photo for Revolutions. Oh, I was a little heavier back then. She's so heavy. He's so heavy. I'm down like 40 pounds from my max. Crazy, man. Crazy. Crazy. Oh, let me not get lost in nostalgia. Leather, yes. Yes, that's right. Had a leather jacket and everything. Full Billy Idol enabled. This is going to be nothing to the podcast, to the podcast population. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. All right. I might have used it for Lou Rockwell profile pic, yeah, back in the day. All right. Let's get to your recent messages. Yeah, I might have used it a couple of books. Air Force One is not ready. Yeah. Yeah, they can't. The amount of knowledge that we've lost is crazy. You know, like one of the reasons, like the Concorde had to be scrapped because people couldn't maintain it. We just lost the skills. I don't really think we could actually go back to the moon. And part of it is, you know, a non-meritocracy. I mean, I don't know if you know this, that one of the reasons why Genghis Khan was so incredibly successful as a warlord, you know, he ended up controlling like, 24% of the entire world's economy. And I've heard reports he was born as a slave, but I think his father was a chieftain, but he was poisoned and he swore revenge. But one of the reasons why Genghis Khan was so successful was he promoted raw meritocracy in his military. He didn't care. I don't care who you are or where you're from as long as you ax them. So he didn't care about lineage or aristocracy. He was just like raw meritocracy. And that gave him a fairly unparalleled fighting force. And because of that, he was able to be as powerful as he was. And raw meritocracy wins out every time. And this is why the West won against China originally, sort of back in the day, the Opium Wars and so on. Because the West was doing more, promoting more meritocracy stuff. And because the West was promoting more meritocracy and China was more about entrenched bureaucracy. And China, of course, like China, they actually had the knowledge of seagoing vessels, like vessels that could cross entire oceans. But they were so negative and hostile to that kind of change that the guy who had invented it, you know, they killed him. They burned all of his plans. They forbade anyone from attempting to reproduce his experiments. And that was it. That was it for their progress. And the societies that ossify and calcify and stop producing, like stop basing things on meritocracy, those societies, well, they stop progressing and they get taken over by other societies that focus on meritocracy. You get a successful society, right, based upon meritocracy, and then that society hardens and calcifies, and people want the unearned, so they stop working with meritocracy. And then what happens is they get taken over by countries and cultures which have more raw meritocracy. And that's the tragic cycle of societies as a whole. It's really sad. If we could just, I mean, we would be exploring the galaxy if we'd stayed on meritocracy. But instead, we went against meritocracy and we went straight into promotion by politics rather than promotion by excellence. And the meritocracy used to exist in the software sphere or square. Now, the last remnants of meritocracy exist really only in online media. And I would say, of course, that it is nice to see Tim Pool. What is he? Number one news app now. Tim Pool, a number one news app. And that is very impressive and good for Tim. He's obviously done a great job. I mean, bit of a centrist for my tastes, and I don't watch the show, but I will say, you know, congratulations to him for getting to that spot. So, all right, let me get back to your questions and comments. Oh, yeah, that picture, that was actually back in my corporate days. Yeah, that picture was back in my corporate days. All right. I'm happy to take your questions and comments and donations at freedomain.com/donate. Very appreciated. Very, very much appreciated. And if you have questions, we can go a little spicy, a little spicy tonight, if you like. Have you heard the story of Charlie Javis? At 28, she sold her company to J.P. Morgan for $175 million, except the company was pretty much faked. Pretty much. She originally created a platform called Pover Up. You know, because she wanted to lift people up from poverty, Pover Up, you see. And she said, oh, no, it helps underprivileged communities access credit at lower interest loans, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we raised $300,000, active partnerships, except it turned out that the company was never incorporated and nobody really, they never lent anything out or facilitated any loans. And then she tried to address the federal student aid system and she streamlined it and, you know, all of that. That was her sort of big thing. And she said, but 4.5 million users in 4 years, 20 million in funds raised, and a partnership with major institutions. I mean, it's total Theranos stuff, right? Guys and pretty, she's not super pretty, but, you know, guys and sort of pretty girls with bedroom eyes. I mean, it's not a good combo for investors. It's completely ridiculous. All of the big names involved in Theranos who just got completely taken in by the a blonde stick insect of fraud. And also this woman said that, Peter Thiel offered me $100,000 or whatever, but I decided I didn't take it. Right. So this woman, she pitched, JP Morgan. She pitched this, company called Frank. Frank knew more about their students than any lender, college or employer. So JP Morgan said, we'll buy it for $175 million. So for her, she was going to get $10 million up front, $20 million retention bonus, a managing director position at JP Morgan, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, JP Morgan started to do due diligence, right? They wanted to verify Frank's, the woman's company's 4.5 million user base. She refused, said, no, it's privacy. I have privacy concerns. It's like, lady, if they buy your company, they're going to be able to go through all the data. There's no such thing as privacy concerns. The real reason, Frank had fewer than 300,000 users. So that's not good. What is that, 7 or 8% of what she's claiming? So she was desperate to close this deal, so she paid $18,000 to create millions of fake accounts, spent $105,000 on backup, fake data, and then destroyed all the evidence minutes after verification. Then, of course, JP Morgan tried using the customer database. This is from Business Hustles on X. 28% of emails were delivered compared to the usual 99%, 1.1% open rate compared to the typical 30%. Investigation revealed the fraud, and there were earlier signs. So I won't sort of get into all of that. I mean, the company used stock photos as actual users. So, crazy. And she was arrested in April 2023 for counts of fraud, SEC charges, criminal charges by DOJ, faced up to 110 years in prison. She pleaded not guilty. And then the trial was done. She was found guilty of a bunch of stuff, and sentencing is in August. And of course, who knows what's gonna happen. So, very sad. I don't know why due diligence should just be right up front. Particularly if people have certain characteristics. All right. Let me get to your commences. All right, so let's get to your questions. Yeah, she was featured on Forbes 30 Under 30, yeah, for sure. Steph, since Kanye didn't get canceled for his new controversial song, any chance you can re-release Donor Only, the truth about Nazism presentation? Well, regardless of, I think Kanye got canceled pretty hard, but the truth about Nazism was an NFT, so... it was sold, and the person who has it can do whatever they want, I suppose, with it, but it's not mine anymore in that way. It's not mine in that way anymore. So it's not mine to release because it was sold as an NFT. I might still be sitting on the truth about IQ. I don't know, man. I don't know. I just don't know. All right, so let me see. What else do I have? Edward Dowd says, I'm often asked if the COVID shots caused people to change or go crazy. Can't say definitively, but something went off the rails in the UK with new psychiatric PIP disability claims. 22 and 23, that's 2022 and 2023, were up over 100% with a 14 standard deviation from trend. I mean, I think that the COVID shots do cross the blood-brain barrier. And are they having any effect on people's thinking? Well, Mike Cernovich wrote to Meta executive warned fake engagement on Instagram app could be in the range of 40%. Ouchies. Ouchies. Are there any movies that you guys are looking forward to being a part of? Or watching? Which do you think is the spiciest presentation you're sitting on? I don't know. I mean, it's funny, you know, it's funny. So, I mean, this is a strange thing. This is a strange thing about, I mean, if you don't mind, if I get personal for a couple of minutes, I hope you don't mind too much, but this is a strange thing about the world that is. I mean, all of the stuff that was absolute dangle your nuts off the cliff edge over bottomless pits of razor blades, all the stuff that was unbelievably spicy 10, 15 years ago does not seem that spicy now. I mean, I know that's kind of the point, right? The kind of the point is somebody's got to break the ice. I like to think that maybe I broke the ice on some of the spicier stuff because maybe I'm just gaslighting myself. I don't know. I don't know. But maybe I'm gaslighting myself because part of me says, well, since I did all of this spicy stuff way back in the day, like all the super spicy stuff that kind of paved the way, it broke the ice, I don't know, whatever, right? For this topic to be, or my cancellation, my deplatforming kind of allowed people to sort of talk about this stuff more or raise people's interest in it more. Because, I mean, one possibility is I kind of burnt up my whole, large parts of my income and my reach and my reputation. I burnt all of that up for nothing, you know, like that I was just too early and, I was like some guy who, you know, tried to sail across the Atlantic from Ireland to Newfoundland and just sunk on the way, and nobody knows, and it doesn't matter, and it was all just a complete waste, right? Or you know, it's a little bit more comforting. There's no real way. There's no real way to know this because there's no null hypothesis here, right? But the other thing is to say, well, I brought a lot of attention to very spicy and controversial issues, and that helped people become aware of them. And then, partly because of my reach, and then partly when I was deplatformed, people took these arguments or ideas more seriously, right? I'll never know. I'll never know if I had simply kept my mouth shut for another 10 or 15 years. I'll never know if I would just catch the wave now, or whether I had something to do with the waves that are happening now. I'll never know, for sure. For sure. So, it is wild to me, because, you know, I've spent some time on X, particularly sort of recovering from this ear thing. I've spent some time on the couch and just waiting to get better. So I look at what's being posted on X, and I mean, of course, it's also a free speech platform, right? So the 2006 to 2016, 2005 to 2015, 2007 to 2017 or whatever, was an era of absolutely glorious free speech, like unbelievably glorious free speech. It was incredible, incredible. And then because free speech was working and doing its thing, which it's supposed to do, what happened? What happened was everyone started to get deplatformed, who was telling sort of any truth that went against the fundamental interests of people in power. And sometimes even worse than deplatformed, right? So when I look at what's going on X these days, it's mind-blowing. Like how many spicy takes are just floating across the platform. I mean, I know people are still getting deplatformed from time to time, or suppressed or whatever, right? Follow accounts are kind of going up and down. You can look at Dom DeLucre for things like that, or other people. But I look and I'm like, and I, you know, I don't know if I have anything to do with this at all. I don't know if I have anything. I'll go to my grave not knowing whether I had anything to do with this at all, whether I was just an early casualty that nobody remembers really, or whether I, you know, flamed out in self-sacrifice to light the way for others. I don't know. I'll never know. I mean, and it doesn't really matter. You know, the past is the past. I made the decisions I made. I don't particularly regret the decisions I've made. So what does it matter, right? It's like whether I paved the way or flamed out inconsequentially is kind of irrelevant, because there's no going back, right? There's no control Z for big decisions, right? For the most part. I mean, unless I were to go back and disavow things that I knew to be true, which I'm not going to do. I mean, I'd rather fade completely into the woodwork. I'd rather fade completely into become like a little rose in a giant wallpaper forever and ever. I'd become inconsequential, become a gnat in the wind. I'd rather completely fade from human view than claim to not believe something that I know to be true. So, Chris says, I believe you were definitely not an insignificant catalyst for the pursuit of truth. That's my gut feeling. Yeah, probably. Probably. Yeah, I have this, just talk about this stuff, the sort of personal thoughts. Every month or two, I have this sort of idle thought. You know, the Scopes monkey trial, which was largely a publicity stunt, and Coulter's written a bunch about this, but I have this sort of thought that you know, if I were hauled up or there was a court case about, I don't know, IQ or something like that, and I were to go through all of the facts, the reason, the evidence, the data, the proof, the charts, the, you know, whatever, right? That the case would be made, the case would be clear, right? But, okay, let me ask you this, right? Let me ask you this. Let's say it's some controversial topic, doesn't have to be anything in particular, but I say some controversial topic, and, you know, some expert were to make the case with great power and vigor and backup and data and blah, 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 right? Let's say someone were to do that, right? What percentage of people do you think would change their minds? What percentage of people do you think would change their minds? I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. I don't know. Well, I won't tell you my gut feeling. I'm curious what your thoughts are. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Zero? I don't go with zero. I don't go zero. I mean, there would be no point being a philosopher if it was zero. Not that that's an argument. I'm just saying that you can't expect me to say that it's zero, given everything I've done for the cause of philosophy. There's just no way that I would make that zero. Couldn't be. So we got zero. Says someone 10%, 2 to 4%, 5%. Yeah, I'm curious what you guys think. It's a fairly important question in life as a whole, right? What do you say? What do you say? 10%. If any such case would be allowed to be put on 40%, call me an optimist. Well, I mean, we would assume it would be live streamed and blah, 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 right? 20%, but 75% wouldn't tell anyone and 5% would. I think 10% says someone does make sense, maybe a little lower. But if people suspect the tides and power dynamics are changing on a topic, they might just go along with it. So this is sort of my feeling, is that we're just pulling these numbers out of our armpits. I mean, yours may be much more valid than mine. My sort of sense is that maybe 15% of people would accept the case, but fewer than half of that would actually repeat it. Right? So I think 15% of people would say, okay, that's a case that's laid out in sort of very powerful ways. But most people, of course, scan their social environment for the acceptability of certain ideas and arguments. They don't look at the truth of things. They look at the danger of things, right? They don't say what is true. They say what is punished. So I think that there are people who will accept the truth, and I would say 15% probably, I would guess, right? That they will accept the truth if it's laid out in a sort of clear, rational, consistent manner. But the question is, if you accept a particular truth, then the question becomes, can you say anything about it? Can you discuss it? Can you talk about it? Will you promote it? I mean, so let's take the DFU argument, right? The DFU, FU stands for family of origin, and DFU is if you stop spending time with or being in contact with your family of origin. In general, it's your parents, doesn't necessarily mean siblings or anything like that, right? Now, the DFU argument is based upon everything that I was told when I was growing up. There's no inconsistency there whatsoever. When I was growing up, and I haven't made this case in years, so, you know, if you've heard it before, forgive me, I'll try to keep it relatively brief. So the DFU argument was based on everything that I was told growing up. So what I was told growing up was that if a woman is dissatisfied in her marriage, the guy is just kind of self-centered. He's, you know, he just, maybe he goes to the pub too much. Maybe he's not really considerate of her. what is it in the Bridges of Madison County? The woman is upset because the men leave the house and the door, the screen door bangs and startles her every time. So if there's just sort of, you know, little sort of minor irritations in your relationship, then you can fuck off to eternity and never look back. And that's what I was told. That I can never remember, the woman who talks to the walls and then ends up running a cafe in the Mediterranean in Greece or something like that, right? And so what I was told was that if you're just kind of dissatisfied and you feel you can do better and you're just not particularly enjoying your relationship, then you can just leave, right? If there are kids, you can just leave. You can just leave. If you're just dissatisfied. Now, I've never, that I can recall, ever recommended leaving your parents if you're just kind of maybe a little bored and dissatisfied. That's not, not a thing that I've ever, because, you know, parents are very important. And look, we're all boring from time to time. You know, you have to have any kind of community, you have to be able to put up with some annoyances and shortcomings, because I'm annoying, you're annoying, we all have shortcomings, and so on, right? Like when I went on a long drive with my family today, and, you know, I was talking about various things, and I'm like, is this interesting? Is this enjoyable? Is this, you know, because I don't want to be annoying or boring, but, you know, we all are annoying and boring from time to time. So having that as a standard is not reasonable, it's not rational, not sustainable. So I was told when I was growing up that if you're not satisfied or happy in a consistent way in a relationship that you voluntarily chose, you should leave. Because this is, you know, the Kramer versus Kramer, right? I mean, what's the big sin that Dustin Hoffman's character has in Kramer versus Kramer, which is a movie I literally paid to watch three times when I was in my early teens. So, he stays late. He stays late at work. That's his big crime. Is he abusive? Is he neglectful? Is he violent? No, at least, you know, when she's leaving, right? And what does, well, the Meryl Streep character says, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to throw myself out of the window if I live here one more day. Well, what was so bad? Well, I mean, he worked hard to provide, you know, they had a nice apartment in New York, which is very expensive. They had a kid. But you see, she was going to throw herself out of the window. She was going to commit suicide if she had to stay in the same apartment with him and their son. And you know, we can sort of go over a million of these movies of women who are just, I'm dissatisfied. It's just not really working for me. I don't feel enriched. I want to go be a girl boss somewhere, blah, 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 right? It's really, yeah, it's a very sad movie. And I watched it, and I watched it again, actually, not a couple of years ago. So what I was told, and I was told in no uncertain terms, that if the relationship is abusive, you must get out. If the relationship is just kind of unsatisfying, the guy's kind of talk, you know, he mansplains things, he works too hard, he's not into the woman's deep and rich inner life, and so on, then she can have affairs, she can leave, and, you know, it's always the same kind of story. There's a woman who's got a husband who's, you know, kind of boring or not really emotionally available and blah, 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 and so she leaves him, she moves downtown, and she's down by the beaches. And she's in a loft apartment, and she just happens to run into this super sexy, you know, abs, pecs, and man bun sculptor. He's a sculptor man, and he's just fascinated by her, and they have mind-blowing sex, and then they order in coffees, and somebody's always coming in with croissants, and you know, you never have plastic bags in these movies. There's always a paper bags with carrots and French loaves coming out, right? And she's immensely rewarded, and she has the best orgasms of her life, and you know, the Carrie Bradshaw stuff, right? The Carrie Bradshaw stuff where there's this endless cavalcade of, you know, hot, talented, brilliant guys worshipping her, and it's satanic, right? It's straight up satanic, and it's a complete lie. I mean, what was there? Samantha in Sex and the City, Samantha ends up dating this unbelievably godlike hot model. She's in her mid-late 40s or whatever, and he's in his early. Come on, man. I mean, it's just satanic. It's having women get addicted to this grass is greener, man. You leave your boring husband, you're going to end up running this really cool cafe on the Mediterranean and go swimming every morning with the dolphins. And it's just like, come here, come here. It's like the OnlyFans guys going to the university saying, you know, you should join OnlyFans. Well, I don't think my dad would appreciate that. Well, he'll appreciate it when you buy him a Lamborghini. Or what is it? Sophie Rain is now dancing around in the private jet that 10 million men have paid for. Blah. Repulsive. But then a lot of these men are trapped in dead bedroom marriages. What are they? You know, it's just terrible. So, all these movies were like breadcrumbs leading women away from security and stability and saying, oh yeah, there's all this great stuff out here for you, man. And there's this sort of famous exchange on X of one woman who says, you know, I want to leave and there's going to be all these men out there for me and blah, 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 blah. And then another woman is like, yeah, I left my marriage 20 years ago. Haven't really had anything since. And it was the worst mistake of my life. And every time she bounces out of one relationship, there's some other, you know, what did Carrie Bradshaw date Mikhail Baryshnikov? Like one of the most talented, best-looking, athletic, you know? I mean, I think he smoked a lot, but he had abs like a map of the Andes. And he's a brooding sculptor, and he brings her to Paris, but then he ignores her. And then Mr. Big, right? I mean, he's gone, and he's married, and he's got a young, hot thing, but they end up just coming back together, and right, blah, 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 right? So it's straight up satanic offering, which is to say to these women, and I don't think the same thing happens with men as much, right? But to say, to say to these women, well, if you leave the security of a stable pair-bonded relationship, there's going to be all of these P. Diddy oiled up, glistening sculptors with man locks and abs who are just going to... Very coarse phrases are rolling around in my head. We're going to finger snap you into orbital orgasms of the gods, right? And that's, you know, this was also Erica Jong, right? The Fear of Flying was the name of the book, The Simplest Fuck, right? Where this was a big thing in the 70s. Also, Judy Blume wrote a book called Wifey about a woman who's got a husband who says, you know, hey man, we get married. So I love you. I don't need to keep telling you because I'm here, I'm paying the bills, I'm staying. So I don't have to keep telling you that I love you. And she has Shep, I think was her ex-lover. And she keeps thinking about Shep when she's having sex with her husband. And he was cool and he was affectionate and he was perfect and pulling him out that way. Or in the novel Jaws, Chief Brody and his wife, right? I still remember, I read the book Jaws a couple of times when I was in my teens. And I remember the scene where Chief Brody's wife has taken, I don't know, Xanax or Ambien or Prozac or something. No, not Prozac, I was too early, but what's the mother's little helper stuff? Anyway, she's taken something to help her sleep and he wants to have sex and he's got his hand on her belly and he's rotating up towards her breasts. And she says, well, I've already taken some drugs to sleep, but I guess you can go ahead if you want. And he's like, no, I'm not very big on banging corpses. And she says, well, that was uncalled for, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And she's all fantasizing about her ex-lover, who's the Richard Dreyfuss character, right? Her ex-lover was cool and hot and hip and blah, 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 right? And so again, this is just, she's unsatisfied. Unsatisfied. And almost all these women left relationships where there was no abuse, no neglect. The guys were nice, affectionate, stable, loved them, but they just wanted more. And that's the satanic thing, right? That's the satanic thing. Just one more. I mean, this is the Garden of Eden. Oh, by the way, hit me with a why, because I'm getting there, right? I said this was going to be short. I lied. Sorry, I wasn't lying at the time, but I realize I'm lying now. Hit me with a why if you find this topic interesting, because I want to tie it into the Defu stuff and all of then what's going on in the world right now. But I think it's really, really important to just understand how much programming has gone into women's heads, which is, if you're dissatisfied, if there's just, it's not quite working for you, there's no spark, there's no click, which inevitably is going to rise and fall at times over the course of a marriage. I mean, I'm very happily married. My wife and I are very passionate with regards to each other, but I'm not going to say that every week is like our honeymoon. I mean, that's just not realistic. That's like comparing every day to your very best day and feeling miserable, right? Feeling miserable. It's wretched. freedomain.com/donate. Help make this the very best day. Actually, no, really, do. Okay, so Garden of Eden, right? Garden of Eden, everything's perfect. Everything is perfect. The weather is perfect. The temperature is perfect. The habitat is perfect. God is right there. The bliss is perfect. The love is perfect. Everything's perfect. So what does Satan come along? He says to Eve, you know what? You could have more. I mean, it literally is paradise. It literally is paradise. God, in his infinite wisdom, has created the perfect environment. The perfect, perfect environment for Adam and Eve. Couldn't be happier. What does Satan come along? He says, you think you've got it all, but you don't, because you see, there's that apple over there, an apple of the tree of knowledge, good and evil. The one that God said, you know, don't eat. You got one job, don't eat the apple, right? And that's what Satan does. He takes a great situation and makes you dissatisfied. Do we do this? Do we do that? And listen, I get this is part of why civilization, you know, hey, this is a really nice cave, but it's not a hut. Hey, this is a really nice hut, but it's not a barn. Hey, this is a really nice barn, but it's not a house, right? So I get that we get dissatisfied. That's where progress comes from. I get all of that. But my God, you've got to rein in dissatisfaction in order to have a happy life, or you're fucked beyond measure. You got to rein in your dissatisfaction in order to have a happy life, or you're toast. You're toast. You'll never be happy, ever. Like, I mean, I've had this adjustment, you know, because I eat well, I exercise and all of that, keep my weight down and blah, 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 right? So I thought, you know, I'm going to sail until, I'm not going to have any real health issues, maybe my 70s, my 80s or whatever, but, you know, have had some health issues. So I've had to adjust that, right? I mean, most people by the time they hit their late 50s, they've had a couple of health issues. So I've had a couple of health issues. And I've had to adjust my expectations because I thought, well, you know, if I eat well and I exercise and I'm happy and I'm productive in the world and I have a job that has meaning and blah, I'm going to be bulletproof. It's like, but you know, I'm not bulletproof, right? I mean, pretty healthy, but not bulletproof. So I had this fantasy, right? You got to adjust your expectations. Sucks, but you got it. I mean, the alternative is to just be dissatisfied, right? I mean, I tell you this, I mean, straight up, man, never been dissatisfied in my marriage. I mean, she's perfect for me. I'm perfect for her. Never been dissatisfied in my marriage. Never felt like, oh, there's more. There's a PDD oiled ab fest of a man bun out there doing sculpture who's going to rub paint on my ass. So I was told that relationships that you voluntarily chose, if you're just kind of dissatisfied, it's totally good. It's healthy. It's right. It's the right thing to leave because out there is fulfillment and lovely cafes you can run on the Mediterranean and there's sculptors and Mikhail Baryshnikov and like there's all of this amazing stuff out there. So, you know, if you're just kind of dissatisfied. Oh, God, there was some Michael Caine movie as well, where the woman knocks down a wall or something like that. It's just some other damn movie where Educating Rita or something like that, where the woman is dissatisfied. You know, she looks at her boyfriend and her boyfriend is eating noisily or is checking his watch too often when they're at a social engagement. Or what is it in the Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston movie, The Breakup? He forgets to bring lemons for her dinner preparation. And she, this means you don't care. This means you don't love me. This means blah, 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 right? I'm going to get out. I'm going to find someone who really cares about me, really loves me. So if you're just kind of bored and dissatisfied, or your boyfriend isn't kind of paying you enough attention, your husband's not paying you enough attention, get out. Get out. This is relentless propaganda. Relentless propaganda. We did miss the donor portion Sunday, and I'm sorry, I was actually unwell yesterday, so I couldn't do it. I was hoping to do it yesterday. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow or Saturday. I won't do it tonight, though. I usually have about an hour, half hour, 40 on my voice. So I don't want to. So that's a great question, and I will make up for it this week. So I was told, and this is, you know, nobody ever criticized my mother for leaving my father. Nobody. And of course, I lived in the matriarchal manners. I lived in the single mother beehive of eternal state-sucking queens, right? So nobody in the family, nobody in the church, nobody in my private schools or my public schools, nobody in the three countries that I lived in, nobody said that this was a bad decision or a bad idea to be a single mother. Nobody. And if there was abuse, you had to get out. Sleeping with the enemy stuff, right? You had to get out. Okay? So that's what I was told. And these are relationships that you voluntarily choose. Nobody forced you into them. So then when I said, gee, why wouldn't this apply to relationships you never chose? Why wouldn't this apply to relationships you never chose? Never invited into your life. If simply being dissatisfied is a damn fine reason to leave because there's way better things out there for you, which I was told with no doubt, no uncertainty, and it wasn't even like, I loved reading movie reviews from a young age, to be straight up, right? I thought I was going to do something in the arts for the longest time, and I did some stuff in the arts, but so I remember... Doom the Dark Ages is unpacking. Maybe that'll be the donor live stream. It's me playing. So I remember when movies came out and the women were unsatisfied and tended to leave the relationship, I would read the reviews. And nobody ever said, well, this was a bad reason to leave, or, you know, it was always like, oh, you go, girl, you're empowered. You know, if that relationship is not totally satisfying to you, then you should move on. Because women seem to be rather uniquely programmable in terms of dissatisfaction. I think, right? Because you sort of see women with regards to a decor, right? The women, it's got to be more pillows, and you got to have the right vase over here. And it's beautiful. I'm not complaining about it. But men, you know, they'll eat delivery pizza while watching a big screen TV that's mounted on the box it came in, while on a futon they found on the street, no matter how much money they have, right? So women tend to be uniquely programmable with regards to dissatisfaction. And again, that drives a lot of male achievement. So I'm not, you know, this house isn't warm enough. This money income is not high enough. We don't have enough. It drives a lot of male achievement. So I'm not even complaining about that. I'm just saying that it is kind of a fact that women seem to be uniquely programmable with regards to dissatisfaction. And again, there's lots of exceptions and goes the other way too, blah, 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 right? So I was told, and everyone agreed. It was everywhere. Everyone agreed. Nobody criticized my mom or the dozens of other single moms that I knew in three different countries for leaving their husbands. Nobody ever criticized movies for talking about how things were just, the grass was always greener and you get all of this great stuff if you leave your husband, right? Which is a lie. It's a lie. In general. So everything that I was raised with, I was like, okay, well, if you can leave and it's good for you to leave and it's productive and makes you happier for you to leave a relationship you voluntarily chose, even if there are kids, if you're just kind of dissatisfied, why wouldn't that apply to the family, which is a relationship you didn't even choose? So it would be like saying a relationship you chose, you can leave, and it's good to do so if you're dissatisfied because the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, having that statement, and then saying, but that should never apply to unchosen relationships, is like saying a woman who chose her husband should, and it's good for her to leave if she's just kind of dissatisfied, maybe a little bored, maybe they're going through a dry spell or whatever. So she should leave that because she gets the well-oiled, glistening ebbed sculpture down by the beach. So she's good. If she voluntarily chose the marriage, she should leave it for the sake of her own self-actualization or whatever. It's generally orgasms. They just sell orgasms, right? This guy's great in bed, really attentive. Goes down like the Poseidon, right? So if a woman voluntarily chooses a marriage, voluntarily chooses a husband, she's just kind of bored and dissatisfied. It's great for her to leave because she'll get much better things out of it, and it's a good thing and it's a positive thing. However, a woman who was forced into an arranged marriage can never leave. Like, you see how that morally, that's completely insane. Like, that's absolutely insane. So if a woman says, well, I chose my husband, but I feel like leaving because I'm unsatisfied. And you say, that sounds like a good idea. But then a woman says, I was forced into an arranged marriage at the age of 15, and I want to leave my husband. And you say, my God, you can't. Anyone who suggests that it might be good for you to leave the husband that you never chose, that you were forced into the relationship, that would be insane, right? I mean, that would be beyond deranged, right? The woman who chose her relationship can leave if she's unhappy. But the woman who never chose her relationship can't ever leave, no matter what. And anyone who suggests that she could leave, or even tells her that she could leave, is running a cult. Like, it's morally deranged, right? We understand that. So hit me with a why if this makes sense as a whole. Now, of course, in general, the reason why women were happy with the I can leave my husband to go and get the sculpture down by the beach is that's, you know, women prefer that. They like that. They think that's good, right? But particularly with regards to mothers, if you were being abused by your family of origin, if you were abused in the past, if they continue to abuse you, of course, I've never told anyone to leave their family. I'm just saying you can, right? You're not obligated. You're not chained. You're not shackled, right? You can leave an abusive family of origin. I've never told anyone to leave their abusive family of origin. That's not because I don't tell people what to do. But, you know, if some woman came to me and said, came to me in Canada and said, oh, I was in this arranged marriage and I can't leave, I would say, you can't. I'm not saying you should, but you can. This is Canada. You're not obligated to stay in an arranged marriage, right? You can leave, right? And what have I always said with regards to the family of origin issues? That if you have an issue with your parents, your mother, your father, both, sit down and talk with them, you know, bring up your issues, give them a chance to respond, you know, have a number of conversations, talk to a therapist, right? Especially if you're going through a family separation issue, I've always promoted a therapy, having a therapist on your side, blah, 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 right? All eminently reasonable and true. So if people are going to say, you can't leave abusive relationships, then they have to go back and undo everything that I was told for 30 years in my childhood and youth. I mean, just logically. And it is a true statement that you do not have to have abusive people in your life. That is a true statement. You do not have to have abusive people in your life. If a woman called me up and said, my husband is abusing me, I would say you don't have to stay. You know, but if you do decide to leave, you know, get a therapist and make sure it's safe and, you know, maybe have a conversation with him if it's safe, see if you can rescue things, see if you can save things, right? I mean, in the movies that I saw, there was never that conversation that happened between the dissatisfied wife and her husband. There was never that conversation that happened. She just, I got to throw myself out the window. I've got to leave. Run, run, run. Right? Got to get out. So what I talked about from the very beginning was eminently in line with society's values, was eminently reasonable, and I never told anyone to leave their family. And I suggested, if it's safe, sit down and have a conversation. Always recommended that. Sit down, have a conversation. See if you can work things out. See if you can be heard. See if you can maybe get apologies. See if you can maybe find ways to change things and right move in a better way going forward. This was always said at the very beginning. No exceptions. Well, one exception. I always have to put in the one asterisk. I remember where I was when I had this. A call-in with a guy who was drinking himself to death, and he had four kids. Every time he saw his parents, he would get involved in blackout drinking, and it was extremely dangerous for his health. And so I said, stop seeing them. get to a therapist and stop seeing them until you can figure out how to be with them without getting blackout drunk, which was, and I think he drove, if I remember rightly, too. So it was really, really bad situation. And one time, 20 years, right? Which I don't regret at all, and I think was the right thing for him. So all of that, eminently reasonable, a lot of it twisted and distorted, of course, by whatever, right? And listen, this is my understanding of everything that I said and did, and my reasoning and my arguments and my perspectives, and is this, and tell me if I've got anything wrong or you remember anything differently, perfectly happy to hear. Let me know if I have a, I don't know what perfectly accurate, do I have a reasonably accurate, hit me with a Y or N, do I have a reasonably accurate view of what I've talked about for 20 years? Let me know. And as I'm sort of waiting for that to come in, what I'm seeing now is not seeing parents is a really common thought. It's discussed openly. It's discussed objectively. It's discussed rationally. And I'm like, why? Why did I get special treatment? Because you know, as a philosopher, your job is to be first, right? Because you work from first principles rather than from empiricism, which means it's really your only chance to be original. If you work with empiricism, everyone else gets to see the same things. If you work from first principles, like everyone can see the theory of relativity now. You can even put planes up with atomic clocks and see that they lose time when they fly fast around the world. But if you work from first principles, you get to be truly original. If you work empirically, a lot of other people are going to see it at the same time. Like the first pill costs $1 billion, the second pill is $1, right? So sort of there's an example of a case that I made that was considered, you know, just the worst conceivable thing in the known universe back in the day. And now is discussed very openly with almost no controversy. I don't know. I maybe there's something about me that is just especially enraging to people. I think there is. I mean, I think objectively there is, right? What was it? I mean, it's what the guy said on X. That my only crime, Steph's only crime, was being too early, right? But I think there is, I stomp on the toothpaste tube, then everybody says, we got to get the toothpaste back in, and he's a bad guy, and then everyone just uses the toothpaste. It's not a great analogy, but I think you sort of understand. Yeah, ironic. Philosophers who are too early become the late philosopher. Yeah, there is that aspect too, right? There's that aspect too. So I think, you know, I mean, I like to think that there are things that are uniquely lovable about me. I think so. I mean, for those who, you know, want the truth and virtue and so on, right? But I think that there are aspects about me that for some people bring great affection and perhaps loyalty. But there are things about me that for other people bring massive rage and attack. But it's not enraging for everyone. Nothing you ever said has made me respond with anger. Yeah. 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 Somebody says, oh, this is regarding your parents. No admittance of childhood abuse or neglect or attempts at leveraging her wishes over any care, what I think or feel about anything. Sorry, that's a bit confusing. Yeah, taking herself out of my life before I kick them out is not been any loss of my life, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not sure it's you. It's the arguments that hit deep in people's cores. Well, I suppose, you know, when a new idea comes along, you know, one of the things that I talk about in real-time relationships as well as peaceful parenting is that parents have generally assumed that society is always going to herd wayward children back to them, right? The child tries to get away, society will attack and shame, oh, she's your mother, oh, she's your father, and bring the children back no matter what, right? Force the children back, ostracize the children into going back, or make the children feel bad enough that the children just feel like they have to go back. I mean, I, you know, people say to me, Steph, you're still so angry at your mother. And it's like, not really, no. I actually was watching part of a documentary called The Savage Peace, which was about what happened to the German population after the end of the Second World War, when upwards of 12 million were, well, anyway, it was just absolutely horrendous, especially what happened when the Russian soldiers were given free pass to rape all the German women from like 8 to 80. It's just absolutely horrendous, right? Not like the kids were responsible for any of this stuff. And of course, this was the environment that my mother was in. And I have great sympathy for what my mother went through as a child. I'm sure that what she went through as a child was about as bad as any human being could possibly conceive of. It doesn't fix my childhood, but it gives me some sympathy for what she went through. And of course, I didn't know any of this until quite recently. So, no, I'm not. So, and people say, well, you know, Steph, you're angry at your mother, and therefore you have these negative views of family. And it's like, I love my family, the family I chose, my wife and my daughter, the family that I chose. We just spent the entire day together. And it was wonderful. My daughter and I are going to go for a bike ride tonight and chat for an hour or two. It's lovely. She was sitting behind me in the car. My wife was driving, and she just occasionally puts these tiny tickles on the top of my little fuzz on my head. I'm like, it was very funny. It was very funny. So then I, of course, take out my watch and reach back to try and grab her legs, and she scoots all over the back seat. It's really fun. So I don't know. Somebody says, I agree the arguments can be gut-wrenching, especially because of the straightforward and empirical nature of your show. Yeah. Yeah, so I think a lot of parents treat children badly because they assume that no matter how badly they treat their children, society's going to hurt them back, as often was the case that the parents who are abusive or negative or destructive or harmful or toxic or whatever, that those parents themselves got herded back to their own parents by societal ostracism and, oh, but it's your family and all of that, right? And you know, I get called cult-like, and it's like, but the idea that you can't possibly get out of abusive relationships and have to stay in them forever, no matter how bad they are, isn't that kind of cult-like? That seems to be much more cult-like than have a conversation with people and talk to a therapist if you have family issues. And, you know, some families have taken great advantage of what I've talked about. I mean, I remember I had a conversation a while ago with a mother who was thanking me for what I had done in terms of her family. I talked to one of her kids. The kids got them all into therapy, family therapy, and so on. And there was massive progress and, you know, real reconciliation and apologies and hugs. And that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. absolutely beautiful. That's I mean, the idea that there could be family reconciliation and healing is the most beautiful thing that I could think of. You know, if parents treated kids badly and then they apologize, make restitution, figure out how not to have it happen again, go to family therapy and everybody connects and there's trust and beautiful. I couldn't be happier. I think that's, to me, that's always the very best outcome. Always. In particular because, you know, the kids need their grandparents. I mean, it's a shame that my daughter will not meet my mother. It's a shame. But now it's just a topic that people talk about, and it's quite common, and it's well understood, and people talk about it with great sympathy, and nobody's damning the kids, and the people who make this, the people who make these arguments are not attacked as cultish, or it's just, I don't know. I gotta tell you, occasionally it does twist my grits a little bit. I tell you, I just be honest with you. I mean, I want to be direct and clear with you. I mean, it does twist my grits sometimes to see topics that I got absolutely flambéed for, just discussed with no particular controversy. My God, what have I done? All right. Let me see if you have any more questions or problems. Well, and you know, I mean, my reputation got pretty savaged for talking about things that are fairly commonplace now. Again, on X, you know, the stuff that I talked about that people were just like, this is the most appalling, horrifying, terrifying, negative, destructive thing in the known universe. And people are just talking about it now like it ain't no thing. But of course, nobody ever circles back and says, oh, yeah, you know, sorry. Sorry about that. My bad. Shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have done that. Near, far, wherever you are. All right. Do 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 do. Ba-do-dum-ba-do-dum. All right. Any other last questions? Or you are a Canadian icebreaker, Steph. It would be ideal for you to get the credit, but the effect is what counts. Hopefully you can take solace in that. Yes, I do. And, you know, I get that there's a plus and an honor in being in being first. But sometimes I wish the price was just a smidge lower. All right. Somebody says, my son will probably never meet my mom or dad. They won't discuss or apologize for my childhood. My wife's parents are checked out and in some ways worse. I'm sorry to hear that. I really am. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, if my daughter has issues with me, I mean, I ask her, you know, am I doing well? Anything I could do better or anything I can change? Anything like that, right? You're at the top of the normal distribution curve of truth. The average is 5 to 10 years behind. Well, I think it used to be a lot longer, right? Used to be a lot longer. I think people are enraged by you because you precisely strip lies away. Generally, the practical logic and moral principles you stand for, they would agree with, but refuse to manifest in themselves, maybe because of what their conscious mind would do to them. Yeah. I've never really gotten why it's so hard for people to apologize. I've never really gotten, like, well, maybe this is, you know, my Christian upbringing, like we all fall short of the glory of God, right? We all fall short of the glory of God. We all fall short of morality. I'm a pretty good guy. I still have things to apologize for. And I just don't get why it's so hard for people to apologize. I don't understand it. I don't. Maybe you. I'll do a whole show on this. Or do you think low IQ people can be manipulative? Oh yeah. I mean, in fact, manipulation tends to concentrate upon low IQ people because they can't win arguments, so they just have to be emotionally manipulative. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, it's funny. I honestly think that if I could undo the last 20 years and be reincarnated in the present, I could make the arguments that I made back then, and people would be like, well, yeah, that's obvious. All right. Do you think part of the reason that the same or similar subjects are more readily accepted is because of less empiricism present in the other personalities? What? Maybe if people frame the facts as their opinion, then the audience may pick and choose their allegiances instead of feeling morally compelled to act. Oh, because I sort of make the case from reason, evidence, and first principles. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the flaws, so to speak, is that I am very sort of rational and empirical, make the case from first principles, and therefore it's not an opinion. It has a kind of compulsion to it or a compulsion behind it that is different than if it was just my opinion. And maybe I would have been wiser to put forward as an opinion, but because it was unarguable from first principles, like, you know, the IQ stuff, I interviewed 17 or 18 world experts on it from the left and the right and whatever, right? I obviously didn't want to put forward anything that wasn't valid or wasn't true, right? So I always had sources for my presentations and all of that, so. And maybe if I'd put things more forward as, oh, this is just an opinion, this has kind of worked for me, as opposed to, you know, here's the rational and moral arguments from first principles and all of the evidence and all the science and all that, maybe there would have been less blowback, but then it also is not a, you know, I hate making a weaker case when there's a stronger case to make. I'd rather keep my reputation with my conscience than sacrifice it for the approval of corrupt people. Like, I'd rather have a good reputation with myself and a bad reputation in the world than vice versa. Because I can ignore the world, I can't ignore my own conscience. So I'd much rather have a good relationship with my own conscience than be approved of by the people eager to squeal on their neighbors for having three cars in the driveway during COVID. You know, the vile specimens that always think they are Oskar Schindler when they probably would end up being Nazis. I don't see any more ways people could be outraged. I don't know if there is anything further to unmask that you haven't covered. Is that my lack of imagination? Oh, yeah, there's more. Yeah, there's more. There's more. Oh, yes, there's more. But I've worked... we work the black seam together. So I've worked in the trenches under shell fire since I was 15 years old. And then I quit when I was 56. Quit politics. Because I did 40 years. I did 40 years in the trenches, fighting hard. I mean, I didn't just emerge in this sort of political realm when I started becoming a public figure. I mean, I've been arguing politics all the way from high school through theater school through. I mean, it's one of the reasons they turned on me in theater school is because they realized that I was like a free market capitalist and so on. And they were mostly a bunch of hard lefties as far as I saw. So I fought through theater school. I fought through English degree. I fought through a history degree. I fought in my graduate school. I fought to get companies to do the right thing when I was employees. I fought to do the right thing when I was a manager and business owner. And it was just battles, man, just battles. And then I, you know, became a public figure, and I was just like, after 40 years, man, that was good, man. You don't keep soldiers into their dotage, right? So, yeah, there's absolutely more stuff that I could say, probably even more controversial than I did in the past. But unfortunately, the world generally only punishes the truth tellers, and maybe you get rewards. Maybe rewards accrue to your great-grandchildren. So there's no point forever being so far ahead that all you end up with is arrows in the back and your face in the mud. Now, I did my 40 years. And I'm very happy to have done it. I regret nothing. Really, I regret nothing. And yeah, there's more, but that's going to be for others. I don't want to take all the glory myself. It's going to be for others. All right. So nobody's donated on the stream. Had a couple of things come in. freedomain.com/donate. I really would appreciate it. I think I've spoken a lot about some very interesting and useful topics. I also think my energy is back. My focus is back. My good humor is back. I've traversed my shadow of the valley of evil of physical dysfunction and discomfort, and I'm back, baby, for the most part. I'm still not quite at full yelly mode, but I'm getting there. I remember I was like, yeah, four, six weeks ago, I couldn't even do an hour. Hour and a half. You're donating Friday. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. And go look at Keir Starmer's latest tweets. It's stuff that I think would have got him arrested if he'd said it 3 weeks ago as a private citizen. It's wild. Wild. What Keir Starmer is talking about with regards to immigration. I don't believe it at all, but it's very interesting to see. Very interesting to see. All right. Well, thank you everyone so much. If you would like to make up for not criticizing anyone who's watching the stream, I really do appreciate it. But if you would like to make up for a bit of a low donation night, I would appreciate that. If you're listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. And don't forget, man, if you become a subscriber, which you can do at fdrurl.com/locals, and also subscribestar.com/freedomain, you become a subscriber, you get access to, I think, 4 or 5 AIs that have been programmed with all of my material. And there's a Peaceful Parenting AI. Actually, you can get that at peacefulparenting.com. There's a Stephbot General AI. There's a call-in AI. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can get a hold of, and like well over 100 super spicy, great shows. In fact, we just made sure that very ferocious debate I had about abortion with a feminist is up there in the premium section. You can preview what you get for subscribing at premium.freedomain.com. All right. Lots of love from up here. Take care, my friends. I will talk to you on Sunday. And thank you for your time, care, affection, and attention tonight. And I look forward to our next conversation. Take care, my friends. Bye.